So, welcome this morning to our Advent series, God Incarnate. Now, we started this last Sunday, so if you weren't here, you can check out the talk from that on our podcast, on our website. It's all there. We started by journeying through the first theme of Advent, the theme being hope. This awaiting, this people of God who are stuck in a story where things are not as they're meant to be. And they are waiting for a different outcome. We are grounding ourselves in this series in the text of John chapter 1. John chapter 1 is sort of a famous incarnational text, a text that teaches us about the incarnation of God. We're going to talk a bit more about this on the 22nd of December as we get to that. But for now, we're just camping out through these themes as we track towards it. And so let us start this morning the same way we started last week. We're going to start at John chapter 1, 1 to 18, an incredibly important and rich text as we think about our Christmas journey together as we await for Christ. It goes like this: in the beginning, the Word already existed. The Word was with God and the Word was God. He existed in the beginning with God. God created everything through Him, and nothing was created except through Him. The Word gave life to everything that was created, and His life brought light to everyone. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness can never extinguish it. So God sent a man, John the Baptist, to tell about the light so that everyone might believe because of his testimony. We looked at this last week. John himself was not the light. He was simply a witness to tell about the light. The one who is the true light, who gives light to everyone, was coming into the world. He came into the very world He created, but the world didn't recognize Him. He came to His own people, and even they rejected Him. But to all who believed Him and accepted Him, He gave the right to become children of God. They are reborn, not with a physical birth resulting from human passion or plan, but a birth that comes from God. And so the Word became human and made His home among us. He was full of unfailing love and faithfulness, and we have seen His glory, the glory of the Father's one and only Son. John testified about Him when he shouted to the crowds, "This is the one I was talking about when I said, 'Someone is coming after me who is even far greater than I am, for He existed long before me.' And from His abundance we have all received one gracious blessing after another. For the law was given through Moses, but God's unfailing love and faithfulness came through Jesus Christ. No one has ever seen God, but the unique one, who is Himself God, is near to the Father's heart. He has revealed God to us." If you go to the book of Colossians, Paul puts it this way. He says, "Christ is the visible image of the invisible God." I want us to look at this section today a little bit. John chapter 1, 4 to 5. The Word gave life to everything that was created, and His life brought light to everyone. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness can never extinguish it. If we drill down a little bit deeper today, it's a very similar theme to the rest of our text that we've used at the Advent table already this morning. If you were here as we started worship, you would have heard Strawn read this, Isaiah 9. We're going to read it again. And this is where we're sitting today as we contemplate the light that has come as peace. Isaiah 9 says this: "Nevertheless, that time of darkness and despair will not go on forever." In other words, something is going to come that will burst into the darkness. "The land of Zebulun and Naphtali will be humbled, but there will be a time in the future when Galilee of the Gentiles, which lies along the road that runs between the Jordan and the sea, will be filled with glory. The people who walk in darkness will see a great light. For those who live in a land of deep darkness, a light will shine. You will enlarge the nation of Israel, and its people will rejoice. They will rejoice before you as people rejoice at the harvest and like warriors dividing the plunder. For you will break the yoke of their slavery and lift the heavy burden from their shoulders. You will break the oppressor's rod, just as you did when you destroyed the army of Midian. The boots of the warrior and the uniforms bloodstained by war will all be burned. They will be fuel for the fire. For a child is born to us, a son is given to us. The government will rest on his shoulders, and he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. His government and its peace will never end. He will rule with fairness and justice from the throne of his ancestor David for all eternity. The passionate commitment of the Lord of Heaven's armies will make this happen. A reminder for those of you who were here last Sunday and for those of you who weren't here last Sunday, a quick context check. This is not a text that speaks about the New Testament church. This is not a text that talks about what it's like to be alive in 21st century New Zealand. This is a text that sits in the exile story. The people of God have been exiled. They are not in their home, and it is unjust. That's why this justice theme is coming through. That's why this darkness theme is coming through, because that's the context this sits in. Things are not as they are meant to be. And so, we see two things happen in this text. Firstly, for you will do a bunch of things. You will break the yoke of their slavery. You will break the oppressor's rod. There's this sense that this God is going to act and do something. So there's this promise of the actual delivery of some outcomes. And then there's this, and he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Not only is what he will do, there's a name, there's a title. And with titles come some outcomes as well. It's hard to be the Prince of Peace when you're not ruling peaceful kingdoms. It's hard to be called the Wonderful Counselor when no one is being looked after. It reminds me of, you know, when we think of election time, and for the months leading up to an election, there's always this sort of sense of, this is who I am, and vote for me because I will deliver this. I'm running for this position, and in running for this position, I will do X, Y, and Z. And there's this sense that as the politicians campaign, they're trying to build a profile of who they will be if you elect them in. And there's a sense that in the text today, it's a little bit like that. There's the sense of, this is who this guy is. This is who this God is. This is what's going to happen when he is in charge. There's this sense of the title, and there's this sense of the outcomes. And so the question to ask just quickly is, well, is this like a bait and switch, or is this actually going to have integrity? Is this going to be congruent and true and outcome the way it says it's going to outcome? Is it going to be a bait and switch? Is it going to be another thing of like, this is who I am, this is who I am, and then when I get in, nah. Or is it going to have integrity? Is it going to stay true as it gets through to completion? The thing about this text today is this is the combined promise of the one who is to come and these things. And last week we spoke about this with hope. Hope is not just hoping and wishing for a certain outcome. It is putting our hope in the assurance of the future, listening to the future. And here the people of God listening, and this is what they are hearing. This God is going to come like light into the darkness, illuminate, change, do something new. And he will be like this. He will be a wonderful counselor. He'll be an everlasting mighty God. He will be the Prince of Peace. This Sunday is Advent week number 2, and we've been saying that it's the week of peace, but actually sometimes in the Advent calendar, this is the week of expectation. So depending on the church you may have grown up in, if you grew up in a different church, maybe as you did Advent, expectation was this week, not peace. And you're like, why are they talking about peace? It's expectation. The thing is that expectation and peace are actually really closely related. And I think it's fitting that the two of them be offered today as we think about Advent. The reason I think it's they're closely related is if you have spent any time with fellow human beings, you will realize that peace and expectations do truly go together in a spectacular way. I'm talking about conflict. Because conflict between a person and a person is when expectations are not met. Harmony in relationships is when expectations are met. See, just look at this simple little outline here. Conflict as unmet expectations. I want you to think for a moment of the relational conflicts that you've had this year. Think of those moments when it was a bit like sandpaper between you and a person. And it was probably because you expected more of them and they did not deliver. You had the wrong expectation. And you might even say, well, I have no expectation of anyone at all. Well, that's an expectation. Having no expectation is an expectation. You may be thinking about the systems that are going around us at the moment, the city we live in, the government that we have. Think of that as well. Man, that government did not follow through on the things I expected them to follow through on. That government did not follow through on the thing I thought they were going to do. The system is not working. Again, it's about expectations not being met. Think of the good relationships in your life, the peaceful and harmony relationships. And I'm willing to bet that they're probably relationships that have got realistic expectations. And the expectations are being met. Hence why harmony exists. Hence why peace exists. Hence why things are good. Think of the systems around you that have worked for you this year, probably because the expectations have been met. The meeting of expectations has a sound in our lives. And it's either one of discord, or it's one of harmony. Now, I'm not a pianist, but Mike, hopefully, is this going to be on? Okay. I'll tinkle the ivories, as they say. Hey, Mark, that's what you were doing this morning. So, from the little I know about music, I believe this should sound, ooh. Here we go. I'll try. It's not bad. Can I get something uglier than that? Show me. Discord. Harmony, if you will. Oh. Think of the moments in your life that sounded like those two sounds between you and another person. The discord and You see, in our lives, there's the sense of we live them with dissonance at times, don't we? Things don't feel right. Things aren't adding up. Things are not sitting well. Discord. And then there's times when things do sit well. They're sweet. They're beautiful. Harmony. The Israelites were a people, please do not miss this morning. The Israelites were a people that were in relational discord. When we pick up Isaiah and we read the story of the people of God, things are a mess. It is dissonant. It is that great chord that Mark just produced that made you go, huh. That is the life of the Israelite with their God, with each other, with their world. Things are not right. It's dissonant. And they were hoping for harmony. They were hoping for things to be made right. They were hoping for the chord to shift. And they had a word for this. The word they had for this is shalom. They are awaiting the move to a whole new world, a whole new reality, and the reality is called shalom. And shalom is not just the removal of that first ugly chord. Okay, shalom is not just don't play anything. Shalom is the presence of peace. It is things being right. It is things being well. We sang a song this morning that spoke richly of shalom. It went like this. It is shalom with my soul. It is shalom. It is shalom with my soul. You might be thinking, I didn't sing that word. I said well. That's the same idea. It is well. It is right. It is as it should be. the presence of this, not just the removal of the discord, the presence of the good chord. I want to say very clearly today, your life is not meant to be full of dissonance. Your life is not, that's not the normal life. When we watch these crappy TV shows of people just filling their lives with drama, and drama is the currency of making the show a success, that is not meant to be our lives. We're not meant to make a life of dissonance to have some meaning around here. We are meant to be making lives of shalom, lives of the presence of peace. And the presence of peace has another word that it's known as. Shalom is rest. It's rest. Rest. Or Sabbath. The presence of shalom lived out. Now we see this in God. We see God acting in shalom, responding to shalom. Here's a couple of scriptures. I could have pulled so many more, but for the sake of time today. Firstly, in Genesis 1, God made everything. He made it good. And in the opening narrative of the scriptures, he has blessed it and said, this is good. And it's so good. He rests. He rests. He rules over his goodness by going, it's perfect. So the response to shalom is this place of shalom, rest. And in John 14, we fast forward massively, but in John 14, we have Jesus, the God who is incarnate. We're going to get to that in a couple of weeks, remember. In John 14, we have Jesus saying to the people around him, peace I leave with you, my peace I give to you. That the word is shalom I give to you. Shalom I leave with you. I leave you with this new presence. I leave you with this new reality. And in Matthew 11 and 12, we have this wonderful moment where Jesus says, if you are weary, come to me. If you come to me, I will give you rest for your souls. I will give you shalom in return. Shalom is the normal activity and currency and life in the kingdom of God. And it turns out God wants to give us exactly what we need. Because if there's anything I could comment on this morning as we talk about rest and peace, is that we are not a very restful people, are we? In fact, we're quite restless. Last week we spoke about how Advent was for the hopeless. As we talked about hope, the other side is talking about hopelessness. Today, just for a few moments, let's consider our restlessness. You might be saying, but I had a great day off yesterday. I was in the sun. I've got sunburned. I'm feeling pretty good. That's not the rest I'm talking about. I'm not talking about just by having leisure. I'm talking about what it is to have a quiet and peaceful soul. It turns out God is wanting to give that to us because it's exactly what we need. Because to come back to where we started about expectations, the expectation that we have as a city and as a culture and as a moment in time and history is that we are a city of hedonists. Uplifting talk, Dan? Good stuff. It's what we are. You know, for the last several years of pastoring, I thought our problem was materialism. I thought our problem was consumerism. I thought this was what was taking us out of the game. I thought this is what was robbing us of a meaningful life. But it's not. It's hedonism that's robbing us of a meaningful life. If you have no idea what hedonism means, it basically means it's the pursuit of pleasure and experiences. And it's interesting because actually consumerism fits in that. Materialism fits in that. Actually, all these other narratives that have seemed like big deals actually fit within this big umbrella. We are a city of hedonists. I'm a hedonist. You're a hedonist. Because this is the story we're all cooked in now. This is the narrative that we're all being invited into to live. All around us, this is the narrative now. Try more, see more, do more. More, more, more. The next, the next, the next. I'm an Enneagram 7. It's even worse for me. For those of you who know your Enneagram, you're like, oh, sucks to be you, Dan. But it's true. I just want to keep living for the next. On the Enneagram, my sin for my Enneagram number is gluttony. You might look at me and think that's not a problem. But it's the gluttony of experiences that is a problem. It's the gluttony of keep on pursuing the next thing, give this a go, come on. So there's this inner drive in me that is never at peace. It is never resting because I'm always driving for the next thing. Think of the narrative we've just been cooked in all week long. Think of the things you followed on Instagram. Think of the things that caught your attention in conversation with other people who said, I went and just did this, and you're like, I'd love to do that too. Oh, that will fix my problems. A 6-month trip to Bali, yeah. Maybe that will fix your problems. I don't know. But this is the narrative that we are finding ourselves in. More, more, more. More pleasure, more experiences. And it turns out God is offering us something into that story where he's saying, you are not to be driven by the quest for more. I have delivered something that you richly already need. My peace I give to you. My peace I leave you. Ronald Rollheiser says this. He's a Catholic author, and he says this. It's just stunning, and I wanted to show it to you today as we finish. Today, a number of historical circumstances are blindly flowing together and accidentally conspiring to produce a climate within which it is difficult not just to think about God or to pray, but simply to have any interior depth whatsoever. We, for every kind of reason, good and bad, are distracting ourselves into spiritual oblivion. It is not that we have anything against God, depth, and spirit. We would like these. It is just that we are habitually too preoccupied to have any of these show up on our radar screens. We are more busy than bad, more distracted than non-spiritual, and more interested in the movie theater, the sports stadium, and the shopping mall. And I guess if we were adding to Ronald's writing today, we'd say, and our cell phones, and the lives that we're projecting, and so on and so on and so on. And the fantasy life that they produce in us than we are in the church. Pathological busyness, distraction, and restlessness are major blocks today within our spiritual lives. Pathological busyness, distraction, and restlessness. Advent comes like a new set of light. I showed you an image just before of our city, the city that's lit up for us to be able to keep on living in, to keep pursuing in, to keep being numbed by, to keep adventuring into. But I want to call you today for a few minutes as we finish. You know, last week we called people forward and we prayed for each other. Today, there's no call forward. Today, it's about just disconnecting and unplugging for a few more minutes. And it is about becoming aware of a new light that is shining. Turn down the sense of being enamored with the lights of our city, the life of our city, the life of our frantic busyness. Turn that down. And for the next several minutes, we are just going to sit in stillness. This is a spiritual practice. This is a sacred practice. Silence, solitude, resting, Sabbath. These are good things. And this Advent, it confronts our restlessness and it beckons you to another moment, another light. And that other light, as Isaiah put it, is a person. And his person's title is the Prince of Peace. And today, I believe that by his Spirit, he wants to come and give us peace. He wants to turn down the restlessness that is in us, the chaos, the dissonance, and he wants to bring a sweet harmony where we can say, as we already sang this morning, it's well with my soul. And so as the candle burns, this is our Advent candle. If you've missed this all morning, this candle is the candle of peace. That was hope last week. It's burnt further because it's been burning longer. Today's fresh one is peace. For several minutes, Mark's is going to beautifully play and we're just going to sit and be still. You might like to keep your eyes open. You might like to shut your eyes. You might like to stay sitting. You might find yourself wanting to stand. You might want to kneel. You might want to open a note on your phone and just start jotting away with the kind of fuzziness that's in your mind. Let it out and get it somewhere. You might want to thumb open your Bible and read Isaiah again. But for these next several minutes, it will just be stillness, because God knows we need it.
Nevertheless, that time of darkness and despair will not go on forever. The land of Zebulun and Naphtali will be humbled, but there will be a time in the future when Galilee of the Gentiles, which lies along the road that runs between the Jordan and the sea, will be filled with glory. The people who walk in darkness will see a great light. For those who live in a land of deep darkness, a light will shine. You will enlarge the nation of Israel, and its people will rejoice. They will rejoice before you as people rejoice at the harvest, and like warriors dividing the plunder, for you will break the yoke of the slavery and the heavy burden from their shoulders. You will break the oppressor's rod, just as you did when you destroyed the army of Midian. The boots of the warrior and the uniforms bloodstained war will all be burned. They will be fuel for the fire. For a child is born to us, a son is given to us. The government will rest on his shoulders, and he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. His government and his peace will never end. He will rule with fairness and justice from the throne of his ancestor David for all eternity. The passionate commandment of the Lord of Heaven's armies will make this happen. So we welcome it. We say, come, Holy Spirit. Come, Jesus. Thank you for your peace. Thank you that you are the owner of peace, the source of peace, and that we find our peace when we come to you. We celebrate you, Jesus. We love you. You are the most beautiful thing in this cosmos. You are the most beautiful thing in this room. We adore you. We're grateful for who you are and for what you give to us. And so this week, send us out in peace and love. Send us to be a presence of peace in a hedonistic city, a presence of peace in a busy time and a restless time. May people be drawn to you and us. We love you. We love you.